operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Beacon Podcast.
The first one of 2015.
Oh, that's right. Happy New Year's.
The song is so badass, dude.
It really is.
Have you seen Rage Live before?
I haven't. Have you?
Yes, one time.
How was that?
Amazing.
That had to be awesome.
It was amazeballs.
Where was that at?
The Coliseum in LA. It was rad because right before they came out, they lit up that torch in the front of the Coliseum.
Yeah.
And then it was on, dude.
Really?
Everybody
they, like,
went crazy.
And then went into it?
Yep.
What'd they open with?
Oh, man, I should know.
You were probably so hammered.
I wasn't that hammered, but I was loving it. That was the first time I ever seen Muse. Muse open for them. And I never had really listened to Muse.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard of them, you know, heard them, and I thought they were all right, but I never... They were the shit live, too, dude.
Really?
I'm a fan of Muse because of that experience.
Muse is a pretty interesting band. Like, their lyrics are interesting, too.
Yeah. How was your New Year's, man?
Awesome. We went down to Hollywood and hung out on the Sunset. We went to this place called Pearl's Liquor Bar, and that place is pretty cool.
Yeah, was it packed?
It got packed towards the evening. So we're outside. They seat us in this outside area, and they have like space heaters. But this has happened to us before there, outside. And it starts cooling down outside, and then the space heaters, like, you got to be like right next to them in order for them to...
Yeah, like, the propane ones.
Yeah, yeah. With the big, like, looks like the Raiden hat on top of the thing. And so we're sitting there, and the girls are kind of having to kind of huddle up all next to one of these space heaters. And then there's another space heater that these other people are kind of cuddling up next to. That one starts running low, and we're like, oh, man, this is going to get bad. So that one runs out, and they take ours away from right next to us and put it in the middle of that area that we're sitting in. Uh-huh. And everybody's huddling next to it. And it worked. But then we were looking at it. They put it in the middle, and they turned it all the way up. And so me and a couple of the dudes, we were like, you know what? That thing is going to run out eventually.
Oh,
yeah. It's still early in the night.
One already did.
And so I asked him, I was like, hey, how come you're not turning that other one on? I asked one of the waiters. And he goes, actually, we're out. And I go, well, this is New Year's Eve. You guys didn't have a plan.
You want to go get some more propane tanks there, pal?
Yeah. And I did kind of hint at that. And he goes, actually, we went, we always go right across the street to that gas station there. And we went there and they're out. And I'm like, so you're not going to do gas? And I was like, this is going to get bad here in a little bit. This is going to get cold.
Yeah.
So me and a couple other dudes, we actually went over to that gas station and asked him if they were like indeed out because, you know, always just check the easiest thing.
Yeah.
And he actually was checking. They're all out except there's one way in the back. We're all, dude, we'll take it. Boom. So we brought it in. And then my buddy's walking with it right in the front door. So we're hammered already. And I'm walking in the front door, and I'm like, nothing to see here. Just a couple guys walking in through with a gas can.
Just saving the night.
And security's all, yeah, no problem. Hey, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You can't walk in here with a gas can. They're all, what are you doing? So we're all, okay, we're going to go upstairs, tell the manager that there's some gas here. So he was able to hook it up and fucking save the day.
Awesome.
Yeah. So we had some warmth. It was an interesting night. We had a blast, hung out with a lot of cool people, met a lot of cool people down there, passed out some business cards for the Beacon podcast.
Dang.
Yeah.
Promotion.
Yeah. And yeah, it was a good time. What'd you end up doing?
That's weird because it was not a similar heater story, but I was playing poker with my neighbor in his garage. He had a bunch of his buddies over, and when midnight came, he had a bunch of fireworks, and he had one of those space heaters like in his garage.
Yeah, like to the keep same it warm. Type.
Yeah, yeah, the same Raiden hat, you know.
Yeah.
And, some of them were smoking weed or whatever. And, but anyways, you know, I guess I'm ADD or whatever, but like, when it was New Year's, I had to go next door, give Rena a kiss or whatever, you know.
Oh, because it was your direct next door.
Yeah, right next door. Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And I didn't feel like getting trashed or nothing, you know, all night and party. Because she was planning on hanging out with her sister anyway because it was her sister's birthday.
Yeah.
But
did her sister come over?
No, they went out to eat and stuff and hung out and stuff.
Yeah.
But so he's got that space heater in his garage, and his door's like one of those insulated ones with the styrofoam.
Yeah.
The garage door.
Yeah.
So he lifts it up and he rolls it up, and we're out there lighting fireworks. And I'm sitting there watching the fireworks and stuff, and all of a sudden he goes, holy shit. Well, you know how tall those heaters are. It's about, 7 feet tall?
Yeah.
Well, your ceiling's another 8 feet tall. Well, guess how high the door was from the heater?
Like
you're
a
only
foot?
Talking about less than a foot. Yeah, by
so
the time.
It's hot up there.
And it started styrofoam. Melting it. Yeah, yeah, it was melting his garage door.
Styrofoam melts super, oh, quick. Super low heat.
It almost started igniting, man.
Yeah.
And he goes, fuck! You know, and he closed it, and he's like, I don't have him to explain that to the wife. And I'm like, just put a poster over it or
did
something.
Did it look all blackened and melted?
Oh, yeah. It was jacked for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was just a funny little addition to the night, you know.
Yeah.
But I won. You know, I never win gambling, but I won. You know?
And it was poker?
Yeah, we did mostly Texas Hold'em. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually fun. Like, right now, this is a poker table that we have that we're doing this on.
I was just thinking about it. Like, we should get a game going on here.
Yeah. The ladies and gentlemen, when in our studio here, it's actually a poker table, which is this is probably the best setup for it. Actually, will hold your material. It has cup holders and everything, so it's like really nice to do the podcast on.
Yeah, I dig it.
Yeah,
because it has like a leather top, so like you don't hear the noise when we put stuff down as much.
Yep,
our books and our beers and so.
You should have seen this thing when I first got it. It's Lindsay's grandma's. This thing.
Well, you can tell it's built well. I love craftsmanship, man. Like a craftsman built this.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's old. Because it's old school.
Things aren't built this way anymore.
Yeah. And this thing though, it had like you know this oak. It almost after like years, it looks like almost like a gray green kind of like a weird puke kind of weird color.
Really?
No. This doesn't. I sanded and restained it.
Oh, nice. Good
job. Yeah. So all this whole thing's been sanded and restained, and it came out really nice. Now it's like a cherry wood kind of mahogany.
It's really nice. We should play poker, by the way.
We really should. Yeah.
I think I have the addicted gene, I guess. Like, once I played poker, I was like, oh, God, I want to go play. There's a casino out by us, and just go do it real quick.
Yeah.
But I thought, yeah, that's about it. I'll do this. But it's weird how poker can change so quickly. Like, my neighbor's father-in-law was there, and, like, you know, in the circular, like, he would play before me, you know. He was kind of to my right.
You had a rotation. How many people were there?
It was five.
Yeah.
And when that guy was, because he had to leave early. He had to leave by, like, 10 or whatever. And I guess we kind of would play similarly. Like, we were gambling. Like, I'm fishing for cards, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it was 10 bucks buy-in anyway, whatever. Yeah, but I did want to win, and I want to try to get better at poker for when we go to Vegas or whatever, and I just enjoy it, you know?
Yeah.
And, dude, it would be him winning, then me, him, then me. But, like, the hands were insane. It would be, like, all kings, aces, like, so the pots were getting big. Mm-hmm. Then once he left, you know, we kind of took a little break or whatever, and then it was just weird hands, just, like, nothing hands, just twos and fours and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I started losing, you know, more, and then coming back, but I ended up winning it at the end. But
nice.
It's good times. I love it.
We're talking to the winner of the poker derby, New Year's Eve poker derby.
Smoking stogies. I smoked a fat stogie.
I got some stogies here, man. We should smoke those.
Yeah, man.
We keep saying that.
But are you allowed to smoke in the house? Or?
No, we shouldn't smoke them in the house. Those things,
you know what we could do?
Dank.
We should insert, you know, a bathroom fan in your ceiling, dude, and duct it out.
That would be cool.
For a stogie room.
That would be cool.
I could totally make it happen.
With a humidor.
Oh, yeah.
I'm down. I'm in on, like, when I was younger, like, I always thought those kind of, like, projects were lame. I'm like, hey, I just want to hang out with my friends and go do all this stuff. Now I'm like, those projects are cool. Not only because you get something forever cool out of it when you're done, but just the skill in learning how to do it. And I like problem solving now. And, like, you view that as a problem. The problem is I don't have a humidor or a stove room.
Yeah.
And I can solve that problem.
Well, I even like those little desktop ones, because I only probably smoke a couple stogies a year, but I'm starting to get addicted to that.
Oh, dude, I've been getting into them lately.
I smoked one on Christmas.
Yeah.
We did the show before Christmas, huh?
We did.
Our last show?
I think we did one right before Christmas. Wasn't it right before? I was about to head out of town.
That's right.
Yeah.
But so I woke up early on Christmas to smoke some salmon. I wanted to smoke a salmon. Do you like smoked salmon?
I'd rather smoke a cigar, but all right, lame joke.
Yeah, it's rolled up, it's fishy. Yeah. But so anyways.
Yeah, smoked salmon's delicious.
It was like 9 and 10 in the morning, you know, by the time I got, I've put my fire way too hot because I have the offset smoker, which I like to do for ribs and chicken.
Yeah, part of your barbecue, yeah.
Yeah, you do the fire off to the side. And
yeah.
This was my first time ever doing a salmon. But dude, I got it way too hot, so I was adjusting my fire. And it was like 9 in the morning, and there was no sound. I had a cigar that I had gotten, and dude, smoked the early morning cigar. First time ever doing that.
Oh, yeah. I've never
it was
done that.
Money, dude. I was really? Listening to some podcasts, getting my friggin' smoke on.
Really?
The salmon came out pretty good.
Huh.
My family liked it. Getting the temperature right, it was all over the place. Like, I tried to keep it at 200 degrees.
Yeah.
Well, it was staying there forever. Well, as soon as I go in the friggin' house to have some cinnamon rolls or whatever, and make some phone calls and all that, I come outside and it was freaking 400 degrees, dude.
The salmon was?
The smoke.
The smoker
the
was.
Heat. Yeah.
It went, okay.
Because I wasn't watching it.
Oh, yeah.
And so it got a little crusty, but I did another one last week and at my cousin's house, and we got it down now.
Really?
We smoke it with cherry wood.
So what was the problem with the like sharp rise in temperature?
I think when I put my cherry wood on, it was too big of a chunk and it wasn't soaked enough. Mm-hmm. I didn't let it soak long enough.
Yeah.
Because I just started soaking it that morning.
So once the water got all evaporated, you think it just took off?
Yeah, it was a full-on fire in there.
Yeah.
Because what I do is I have a 5-gallon bucket of just soaked wood. Mm-hmm. Now I've got it down where I soak it the night before, overnight. So it's totally waterlogged.
Right.
And then when I want to get the smoke, keep it going, I do a wet log and then a dry log. So that way the dry log ignites and burns the smoke log, and it just smokes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's it.
And I just keep a small little flame on. Yeah. And so now we got it down.
Yeah.
And then, so I went to my cousin's. We did smoked chicken, smoked tri-tip, smoked salmon. And he goes, I think we need it at 300. We were able to get it right at 300 if we wanted it on the side of smoker. It's just fun to do, man.
Oh, dude, I love cooking.
Me too. Especially grilling outside.
I got a buddy, and he's just full on into, like, researching. Like, we had his pastrami this week. And
he makes his own pastrami.
Yeah, brines it. It was a two-week brine that he did. So it was sitting for 2 weeks. And
I need to try this.
And then, if you like pastrami,
I love pastrami. Love this. He takes just mustard and onions and pickles, dude. Mustard and pickles.
He makes his own mustard. He imports the seeds.
What the hell?
The mustard seeds.
Does he have a restaurant?
No, but he did. A buddy of his opened a restaurant, and he helped his buddy open the place and create the menu.
Wow.
Yeah. So what this guy does on his off days, he'll hang out with buddies, and they'll just go to the store and research recipes and figure out like the best way to make something. And they won't stop doing it until they got it right.
And he's got it down every time now, probably.
Right? He's like totally uses his left brain like more than anybody I've ever met. And so he's like a robot. So he's like, okay, it's got to be 325 degrees when you do this, and then it's got to get transferred over to 190 degrees for this many minutes. And blah, blah. Like it's like – so he had this thing in a brine and for 2 weeks, and then he had to do a rinse for, I think, at least 24 hours where it just sat in water and rinsed that brine out, because that's where a lot of people go wrong, I guess. It'll be
makes
too
it too
strong.
Salty or something?
Yeah. You want to rinse that stuff out.
And it's corned beef? Was pastrami – well, no, what is pastrami?
It's a brisket.
It's a brisket that's brine.
Well, that's what he did. He did brisket, yeah. Wow. And so he brined it and then soaked it.
We got to get him on the show.
And then he made a blended mix of, I think it was like pepper and coriander for the outer crust. Rubbed that shit on, threw it in the oven at a real low temperature. I think he said it was a 260, and he did it for like 6 hours or something like that at 260. You want to do it until that internal temperature of the meat hits like, I think it was 190. This is funny that I remember all the specifics.
Yeah, I think you can make a pastrami now.
But because I hung out with him when he was like formulating this, so it just must have rubbed off. I never intended on learning it, but so that's at least how I remember him doing it. And it came out phenomenal. He made something called a Russian sauce. Have you ever had Russian sauce with pastrami?
Russian dressing. Yeah, it's like, what did he call those sandwiches with the, it's a Reuben. You put the Russian sauce and then some sauerkraut, and then you grill it with some Swiss cheese.
Is a Russian sauce kind of like the spread at In-N-Out?
Kind of.
Yeah.
But it's like redder, I think. It's
this is something. How his turned out kind of like that spread.
That's stuff's really Thousand. That's actually Thousand Island dressing.
That's all they use?
For the spread at really? In-N-Out? Yeah, it's just Thousand Island.
Why do they call it spread then? They're all, it have sounds some cool. extra spread. Yeah, it sounds
cool.
Well,
they probably, you know, kick it up a notch. Make it their own, you know. It's put some stank on it. But dude, a friend of mine is opening a brewery out here, his own brewery.
He's going to?
Yeah. Oh, really? It's in the works. It's going to be happening. Yeah. We'll have to get them together and see if they, you know, dude, what's better than pastrami and beer, dude? A good craft pastrami and craft beer.
This guy says that if he ever, I've asked him, do you want to open up your own restaurant ever one day? And he goes, you know, I love doing it. Yeah, and I'm afraid if I do it for money, then I'm going to stop loving doing it. Like, it's like Slater, you know, like if you're like, well, actually he still loves music, but at some level it's got to be like, if you are doing it for a living, then it takes away some creative aspect to it. Cause now you're like forced to be doing it almost. Right.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that stifle some of your creativity? I don't know.
No, because I think if you're getting paid for it and it's like, If I got to the point of barbecuing where I could just kill it and make a business and travel, dude, I'd be unstoppable, I think. Like, it would just fuel me, my creativity more to try to be better.
Yeah.
The thing that I think where people lose it is once you get employees and they kind of fuck it up a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Like, you know, Bob needs the day off. He's wants 2 weeks off, and we think that he's been sexually harassing Sheila. And now you got to do all these personnel problems,
and you can't just focus on focus on, like, say this guy's pastrami. If he can just focus on making pastrami and then hire a manager that he can trust to deal with all that shit.
Yeah, the problem is, I think unless you're wealthy before starting an endeavor like that, then you have to somehow get pay like a paycheck out of your company to sustain yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little like, because then you can't just be the mastermind behind the flavor. You've got to be doing sweeping the floors, and you got to be like, you're probably going to be doing other things, you know. I think unless you actually have the money enough to just be able to hire everybody to run the business, and you can just be the mastermind behind the flavors or whatever. You ever watch Bar Rescue?
Yeah, yeah.
That's an interesting show.
Well, that's what gave me the idea of like the bad employees. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because like there's restaurants I go to where I know I've known the owners or whatever, and then I'll go there and I say, man, if they only knew this guy was a shitty ass waiter, you know, these people are fucking him over, kind of, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's part of being a manager, is you got to be on that shit, you know.
Yeah, you do,
all the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be honest with you, it's kind of like a little dream of mine to own a restaurant and a bar.
Really?
Like, I love cooking too, man. I love beer. Like, one of my favorite jobs was working at an Italian restaurant.
Yeah. And, would you like to, you would like to cook? Or, like, what would you like to do? Just own the thing and kind of...
Kind of, yeah, own it and run it. I mean, I do love cooking, but I don't have the talent to do it, like, and bust out the same steaks and the same pastas, you know,
well,
make it...
Sure. All you need to do is have a system.
Yeah.
That's it.
But for now, it's just a dream. But I would love to just quit my job and do it sometime, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But
well, that's good that you're always like thinking in terms of that, because I think a lot of people, they'll get into whatever job they have and then they just give up. You know, after that, they're like, "All right, I have my career, and this is the rest of my life." Like, I think it's good to always kind of have like goals and things that you want to do, and always try to like chip away at these things, you know. You got one life, might as well maximize it.
I mean, and I think maybe I will end up trying to do something eventually, but I'll partner with my brother or something, or somebody. But if you're passionate about something, go for it, you know?
Yeah. And now your brother's in the military?
He's just out now. He's out.
But
he's on the reserves.
Okay. Now, is that a typical thing, like when you finish, you go into the reserves, or is that did he volunteer to do that?
He volunteered, I think, to do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Just because he's still going to college and working several jobs, you know.
Yeah.
It's only like on the weekends he goes in and does stuff.
And he sent us some books. He's been listening to some of the episodes, I guess.
Yeah.
And sent us a few books. We're definitely going to check out those books. So
I should have brought them in here. I think I left them on your counter.
That's all right.
But yeah, he sent us some books about guerrilla warfare.
Anybody that wants to send us any kind of information, please. We are down with it. It's just info.
It's much appreciated, yes.
Info. And that's awesome. That's cool. That was really nice of him. So, what's his name?
Thank you, Mitchell.
Mitchell. Thanks, yes. Mitchell. What do you remember what the books were?
I should have brought them in. But they're basically like the origination of like guerrilla warfare. And I should know these names. But the guy who started the Army Rangers.
Oh, yeah.
Way back when. And this other guy who... learned guerrilla warfare from the natives.
Yeah. Yes.
They would. I think history would tell you George Washington did that, but it wasn't.
I was trying to think. I was reading something the other day that said that was talking about the origination of guerrilla warfare, but I read so much stuff that it's tough to remember what it was. If I think about it, I'll bring it.
Right
up.
On. And yeah, after the break, maybe we could bring the books in. And
but I mean, guerrilla warfare was, you know, eventually found to be. I mean, if you're having to defend your lands, that's the best way to fight, guerrilla warfare.
I can't believe they would fight any way else.
Well, dude, because how lame was it that these guys used to stand in a line and shoot each other? Because it was, you know, the civilized
gentlemen,
way of fighting.
Yeah.
Dude, civilized for who? It sounds stupid if you're in the, you know, if you're in that line.
Well, like he says in the Guns N' Roses song, what's so civil about war anyway?
Yes. yeah. I'd way rather. I honestly think that if something ends up happening in America, the victors will be your skilled guerrilla warfare practitioners.
Rednecks.
Or who knows, man? Those guys could be badass at it. I have no idea. It's tough to tell what's going on, you know, on the other side of the country.
You never know.
But I just know people are getting pissed off in America right now.
Yeah.
Pissed off. And I'm not talking about your people protesting in the streets and your Occupy movement, because I think a lot of those people are just kind of dupes. They're becoming, they're falling prey to that the Leninist revolution, right? They're they're becoming the proletariat who gets upset that the bourgeoisie is the 1% or whatever, so they feel like they've got to riot against it. All they know is they don't have stuff and they want what the rich people have. Well, if the rich people earned it, then that's theirs, and you don't have a right to take it. Now, if they earned it through corruption, that's another, that's a whole other thing. But you don't have the right to something that somebody earned legally, lawfully, and, you know, morally. You don't have the right to their shit. It's just funny that everybody's like, oh, let's tax the rich and give it to the poor. The whole story of Robin Hood even fucking bugs me.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think there is a shitty agenda, like in the media. It's just if you watch the news, it's all, you deserve, if you know, are you hurt because you can't work or whatever, we'll sue for you, blah blah blah, you know.
Yeah. And it's always daytime TV. It's people that don't have jobs, that are at home, that, you know, have the ability to just sue people. And
well, just like right now with the downturn in the economy, and everybody's like, well, I can't get a job, you know. I have an uncle who's always like, he finally has a job, and I think he's finally feeling good about it, you know?
Yeah, your uncle that, yeah, you were, we talked about him on a previous episode.
Yeah, he lived with his mom for fucking ever. He's 40-something years old.
And it has to feel good.
Yeah. You met him that one time at Fresco's at the reggae night. And he's a good guy.
Okay.
And, but it's just like, I finally see a change in him. Like, hey, you're earning your buck now, dude. Feels good, right?
Yeah.
And I think we should be motivating people more, like, you can work and you can be successful.
Yeah.
Even though, there is seems to be an agenda to tax you more and make us poor, but
yeah, there is, and that's elimination of the middle class.
Yeah, I see that big time.
Middle class gone. That's part of the, you know, that's part of that manifesto, the Communist Manifesto. Yeah. Eliminate the middle class. Now they do a little switch in terms because we learned it as the you know, the proletariat versus the bourgeoisie, but they are talking about when they talk about overthrowing your oppressors and overthrowing the bourgeoisie, they're talking about the middle class. That's ultimately, it's like, it's a devious twist on words that they do. Because the proletariat are the, you know, the people that are always unhappy in their lot in life. And I'm not unhappy at my lot in life. This is what I deserve. I'm exactly where I deserve to be, given everything that I've done, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Actually, I'd argue that I probably deserve to be have a little bit more money, just because I don't think we should be being taxed like we're being taxed.
Yeah. Like, and I personally don't mind paying taxes, but it's getting extremely too... For what we've been taxed, has the country been gotten any better?
No.
When you drive down the fucking street, is it better when they raise taxes? It never gets better.
No.
Nothing changes.
No.
It just gets worse.
Yeah, so that should be like just one indicator that goes, oh, maybe that's the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And plus, I'm not saying all taxes are bad. There is, like, constitutionally, they're approved. You have, like, duties, imposts, excises. These are tariffs. These are taxes that are constitutional. The income tax was never in the Constitution. It was made supposedly legal via the 16th Amendment. But the 16th Amendment...
Was that in like 1915? Like,
it was what? In
1913. Okay.
Same as the Federal Reserve Act. A lot of shit happened. A lot of the scandalous legislation in this country was passed right after the Civil War, like 1869 to 1872. And right around the Federal Reserve Act, like 1913, 1914, and then in your early 1930s, because America went bankrupt in the early 1930s, and so you had some more crazy-ass legislation passed then. You had, like, the confiscation of gold. You had the New Deal, which was a huge socialist program by FDR. Mm-hmm. But anyways, to get back to what I was saying, the income tax most likely wasn't even properly ratified. There was the Congress is supposed to approve this thing, and it had approval by like a secretary or something like that. Congress is supposed to be assembled to vote on it. There's all this crazy controversy on whether or not the 16th Amendment was even properly ratified. There's books about this.
Wow.
And I should study that, because we should address that subject.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'm curious about it. I wish I studied it more, but I haven't.
But I at least like bringing it up so that people can go research it at home, and if they find something cool, send it on in. But I don't believe that the income tax should be a legitimate tax. They shouldn't tax you on your labor. Like, I get that they tax goods coming in from other countries because that's what keeps our economy propped up against other countries. Like, I don't really believe in pure free trade. I believe that we should be able to put tariffs on incoming goods, you know. But,
I agree with you. It's just, if I've seen it working better, like our goods and our services working better from the taxes, I'd be a little bit more cool with it. But
yeah,
we're fighting wars that we might not agree with that money.
Well, we've formed this monster that is the government.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is it's out of control. The thing is so out of control now, we're not even allowed to know most of what it does. It's got covert operations everywhere. It's got its fingers everywhere. Spies everywhere. It knows everything. The NSA is listening to just about the whole world. Like, this thing has gone out of control.
That's sad.
All right, let's take a little break and we'll get into... We are doing our third episode on psychopolitics, and we will be diving further into the book that it is called Brainwashing, A Synthesis of the Russian Textbook on Psychopolitics, where psychopolitics is defined as the art and science of asserting and maintaining dominion over the thoughts and loyalties of individuals, officers, bureaus, and masses, and the effecting of the conquest of enemy nations through quote-unquote mental healing. Basically, this is the Soviet plan to infiltrate the West, and under the guise of quote-unquote mental healing, they're going to basically brainwash the powerful people in this country to conform to socialist ideals. And you can definitely see that that's occurring. So, after the break, we will dive right back where we left off last week.
Something wrong, and we've known it all along. Sincerity, yourself.
Yeah. That was Pennywise with Society.
Badass.
And our intro was Rage Against the Machine with Freedom. That was a live version.
That version pumped me up big time.
Yeah. Well, plus with that quote from, that was Mario Savio, this.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious. Makes you so sick at
home
that you can't take part. You can't
even
possibly
to the machine.
Take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free,
the machine
will be prevented from working at all.
Who was the guy on Forrest Gump? Remember when Forrest Gump, I was like, where he gives the speech and the soldier pulls the cords out.
Yeah.
He goes, that was so right on, man. I think that's supposed to be him, dude.
I don't know.
This guy was wearing an American flag for his shirt.
It might be.
It sounds like that was right on, man.
When I'm reading the book, we'll figure out what that was. So, Nick, it looks like you brought in those books that we were given.
So these are historical figures that my brother is very into. He considers these guys the ultimate badasses. Robert Rogers, who I guess, well, I haven't read these books yet, so it sounds kind of stupid, but I guess this guy, started the Rangers, the Army Rangers.
Cool.
And then, Daniel Morgan, Revolutionary Rifleman.
Awesome.
By Don Higginbottom.
I'm in. We will check those out. Faux show.
But did you hear about we were talking about guns earlier. I kept talking about it in the news. News radio I was listening to the other day. There's a lady in Idaho who had a concealed carry weapon, like legal or whatever, and her kid pulled it out and shot her in Walmart.
Really?
Yeah.
Sounds like she... How old was her kid?
I think it was a toddler.
Jeez. Just an accident?
Yeah, accidentally.
Yeah.
But, you know, it sucks, you know, to waste the pajamas that way. You know,
that's true.
It's a good waste of pajamas.
Because she probably was in pajamas.
I'm assuming.
That's
a Walmart dress code, right?
Yeah. And you know what kind of bothers me about gun legislation? Everybody's trying to make a perfect world. They're trying to make a world where nobody ever gets shot with a gun or anything like that. You know what? If you want complete security, go to prison.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, where you're completely controlled all the time, all your actions, your shower, your food, everything's controlled. And you know what? Even there, you can't get complete security.
Well, I told you about my old job, like where I used to work with. There was a point where I was the only guy who had not been incarcerated at one time at my old job. No. And we would talk about jail and shit. Well, remember my buddy Earl, did the podcast with?
Yep.
Well, I'd work with him, his brother-in-law, and then some of these other guys that, you know, it was a construction supply company, so, like, you know, you're just loading blocks and stuff, and so that's kind of the only job they could get or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'd ask them. They were always cool with me, you know. And one, you know, gangbanger guy was always telling me, dude, it's scarier out here being out than it is inside. I said, are you kidding me? He goes, dude, I got to pay bills. I don't know when I'll get my next meal. He goes, at least inside, I got my clicks. And everything's taken care of.
Yeah, yeah.
He literally told me, he goes, there's nothing from stopping me from going back.
Yeah.
And I'm like, pussy or Nathan, you know, drinking some beers? Just that alone what makes me want to stay out.
Yeah, no. Especially how they made it now. They've made it like a, I mean, it really is like a system. It's a system. And you could go for some, like a minor drug, you know, semi-minor drug offense. And what happens to you? You become a criminal. By the time you get out, you're fully indoctrinated into this criminal mindset, and you know what I mean? Like, now you're full on, you have like drug connections, and you're almost, a lot of these guys, like you say, want to go right back in.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing is fucked up.
I mean, does it bother you that America has the highest incarceration rate?
Yes.
Hey, where's the foamy, dude?
Oh, foamy's gone.
Is there. It sounding different?
Yeah. It's probably because we had those friends over the other night that were messing around with it.
Oh, man. Sorry, man.
No, do we have more foamies? Where did we put the foamies?
That's the technical term for the foam around a microphone, I believe.
Yeah.
Foamy.
We put them somewhere. Yeah, oh, I know where they're at.
No big deal.
I got them. I'll go get them real quick.
No, it's cool.
Okay, I'll get them on the next break.
I'm going to steal this one.
Oh, yes. Maybe that's where it went. All right, so to continue, we are continuing with this book. This is Brainwashing, a Synthesis of the Russian Textbook on Psychopolitics. And last week we were diving into how the socialist plan is to infiltrate the West and carry out certain activities, certain subversive activities. And the ones that we were discussing last week were, like, one was that they were going to continue conscription and cause the youth to really have a to be disillusioned with their government, which is happening. Not that I'm standing up for the government, but you got right now a whole youthful generation that wants nothing to do with America, and I think that that's dangerous, especially when there's such entities that are, you know, going against us. Speaking of that, they also are going to make people look insane that think that there is a communist subversive activity. So I think that's pretty funny. So that was what we talked about last week, basically, when we read. So I'm just going to keep going. The misalignment. So now I'm starting to read again. This is not my words. Now I'm reading the words from this manual. The misalignment of the loyalty of youth to a capitalistic nation sets the proper stage for a realignment of their loyalties with communism, creating a greed for drugs, sexual misbehavior, and uncontrolled freedom, with presenting this to them as a benefit of communism, will with ease bring about our alignment. In the matter of guiding the activities of juvenile courts, the psychopolitical operator entertains here one of his easier tasks. A capitalistic nation is so filled with injustice in general that a little more passes without comment. In juvenile courts, there are always persons with strange appetites, whether these be judges or policemen or women. If such do not exist, they can be created by making available to them young girls or boys in the quote-unquote security of the jail or the detention home, and by appearing with flash cameras or witnesses, one becomes equipped with a whip adequate to direct all the future decisions of that person when these are needed. The handling of youth cases by courts should be led further and further away from law and further into quote-unquote mental problems, until the entire nation thinks of quote-unquote mental problems instead of criminals. This places vacancies everywhere in the courts, in the offices of district attorneys, on police staffs, which could then be filled with psychopolitical operators, and these become then the judges of the land by their influence, and into their hands comes the total control of the criminal, without whose help a revolution cannot ever be accomplished. By stressing this authority over the problems of youth and adults in courts, one day demand for the psychopolitical operators could become such that even the armed services will use quote-unquote authorities on the mind to work their various justices, and when this occurs, the armed forces of the nation then enter into our hands as solidly as if we commanded them ourselves, with the slight bonus of having thus a skilled interrogator near every technician or handler of secret war apparatus, the country in event of revolution, as did Germany in 1918 and 1919, will find itself immobilized by its own army and navy, fully and entirely in communist hands. Okay, new chapter. This chapter is on the general subject of obedience. Obedience is the result of force. Everywhere we look into the history of Earth, we discover that obedience to new rulers has come about entirely through the demonstration on the part of those rulers of greater force than was to be discovered in the old ruler. A population overridden, conquered by war, is obedient to its conqueror. It is obedient to its conqueror because its conqueror has exhibited more force. Concurrent with force is brutality, for there are human considerations involved with all, which also represent force. The most barbaric, unrestrained, brutal use of force, if carried far enough, invokes obedience. Savage force, sufficiently long displayed towards any individual, will bring about his concurrence with any principle or order. I should restate that sentence. Savage force, sufficiently long displayed toward any individual, will bring about his concurrence with any principle or order. Force is the antithesis of humanizing actions. It is so synonymous with the human mind, with savageness, lawlessness, brutality, and barbarism, that it is only necessary to display an inhuman attitude toward people to be granted by those people the possession of force. If you would have the obedience, if you would have obedience, you must have no compromise with humanity. If you would have obedience, you must make it clearly understood that you have no mercy. Man is an animal. He understands, in the final analysis, only those things which a brute understands. As an example of this, we find an individual refusing to obey and being struck. His refusal to obey is now less vociferous. He is struck again, and his resistance is lessened once more. He is hammered and pounded again and again until at length his only thought is direct and implicit obedience to that person from whom the force has emanated. All right. So just in case you guys think, and you've been taught that this new age or this new thing that's coming, this new world thing that's coming, is going to be benevolent and we're going to be unified under the UN, there'll be no more war, there'll be peace, it's going to be great. This is what these people think. It'll be great as long as you believe what they believe, and if you don't, then you're going to be beaten the shit out of until you do obey. Continuing.
Be obedient.
This is a proven principle.
I understand. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Well, let me finish this paragraph. That way I can keep my place. This is a proven principle. It is proven because it is the main principle man, the animal, has used since his earliest beginnings. It is the only principle which has been effective, the only principle which has brought about a wide and continued belief. For it is to our benefit that an individual who is struck again and again and again from a certain source will at length hypnotically believe anything he is told by the source of the blows. Yeah. What up, buddy?
Well, I mean, they literally have a textbook on how to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's spread out, and everyone...
No, not everyone. This only got to the public eye... Our first episode of this... Oh, you weren't here for the first episode. When I first started reading this, it talks about that this guy was originally in the Communist Party. He defected and made this public. This is not supposed to be for public consumption.
It was just... Yeah, it's political leaders.
This should be a guarded secret, this handbook.
But when did it come out? Like, when did this guy bring this?
This was 1936 at the... This was used in the Lenin University. Sorry, prior to 1936, this was used at the Lenin University. And it was the Communist Manual. The text in the book in general is from the Communist Manual of Instructions of Psychopolitical Warfare. So this is what the communists do. They have these schools. They raise these schools where they teach their infiltrators how to infiltrate the West. It's the most deceitful thing. We never hear about it in our media. You want to know why? Our media is controlled.
Yes. I just, I mean, look at America and look at Russia and tell me where you'd rather live.
Yeah. Well, you can't even know. You can't even get to know right now how the average Russian's lifestyle is.
That's fucking depressing, dude.
Well,
it's been proven that communism doesn't work.
Yeah. And I don't believe that this will work. Actually, my hope is that it'll fail before it even gets a chance to start, because I'm hoping that it'll become mainstream through avenues like us, that people will learn what's going on right in front of them. You know what I mean? But this is happening, and the news is not doing anything about this. The only thing that's doing anything about this is people like us.
Mm-hmm.
Spreading, like, doing good research and spreading this. And citing and sourcing our material. That's why it's so important to give people... This is the book. You guys can actually buy this on Amazon. This is on Amazon. You can buy this thing on Amazon. All right. Continue.
I think we would think differently nowadays, you know, with the information we could get. In the 30s, I could see how they can manipulate people easier. But maybe now, just because we're so ingrained in the media...
Well, I believe that the techniques have gotten more sophisticated since this. Now they're way more
subliminals
discreet,
and stuff.
Yeah, and that's why we're going to have to get into that with our other, you know, our future shows. But this is just provides a great background for that the communism has the desire to even do this, to infiltrate the West with these operators. You know, and that they're actually were at teaching at a school these tenets. This is textbook.
Jeez.
You know? All right, continuing. The stupidity of Western civilizations is best demonstrated by the fact that they believe hypnotism is a thing of the mind, of attention, and a desire for unconsciousness. This is not true. Only when a person has been beaten, punished, and mercilessly hammered can hypnotism upon him be guaranteed in its effectiveness. It is stated by Western authorities on hypnosis that only some 20% of the people are susceptible to hypnotism. This statement is very untrue. Given enough punishment, all of the people in any time and place are susceptible to hypnotism. In other words, by adding force, hypnotism is made uniformly effective. When unconsciousness could not be induced by simple concentration upon the hypnotist, unconsciousness can be induced by drugs, by blows, by electric shock, and by other means. And where unconsciousness cannot be induced so as to make an implantation or an hypnotic command effective, it is only necessary to amputate the functioning portion of the animal man's brain to render him null and void and no longer a menace. Thus, we find that hypnotism is entirely effective. The mechanisms of hypnotism demonstrate clearly that people can be made to believe in certain conditions and even in their environment or in politics by the administration of force. Thus, it is necessary for the psychopolitician to be an expert in the administration of forces. Thus, he can bring about implicit obedience, not only on the part of individual members of the populace, but on the entire populace itself and its government. He need only take unto himself a sufficiently savage role and sufficiently uncompromising, inhuman attitude, and he will be obeyed and believed. The subject of hypnotism is a subject of belief. What can people be made to believe? They can be made to believe anything which is administered to them with sufficient brutality and force. The obedience of a populace is as good as they will believe. The earliest Russian psychiatrists pioneering the science of psychiatry understood thoroughly that hypnosis is induced by acute fear. They discovered it could also be induced by shock of an emotional nature, and also by extreme privation as well as by blows and drugs. All right, check that out, because this is where we're eventually going with the show, is that you're going to learn how the initiation ceremony and the initiation rites of the secret societies, what they do in the initiations with their members is they use fear and brutality to basically hypnotize people. Okay, so I'm going to read that last paragraph again. The earliest Russian psychiatrists pioneering the science of psychiatry understood thoroughly that hypnosis is induced by acute fear. They discovered it could also be induced by shock of an emotional nature and also by extreme privation as well as by blows and drugs.
What were they doing, like electrical tests too on people's brains? Like shocking their brain?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Also, if you guys think that some of the major emotional blows that humanity has taken, the assassination of Kennedy, the 9/11, your major emotional shocks, these are...
That's how they control.
That's what they're doing on a large scale.
Yeah.
It's called... They call it alchemy. The secret societies call it alchemy, and they believe that they're creating, you know, the perfect race with what they're doing. But now that we're actually able to dive into the science of what they're doing, we know that they are hypnotized. They're trying to, on a massive scale, hypnotize people. And all we'll do is continue to document and prove this. Document, prove.
Yeah, like, well, after 9/11, Bush's rating went up to like 96% or something like that.
And he was able to pass some of the worst legislation ever because everybody was all hypnotized. Like,
Fuck yeah.
The Patriot Act is like one of the worst things. Now they can spy on just about anything you do because I fell for it back then. Back then I was like, let's get the terrorists. I'm going into the military. And my parents they like talked me down because I had like career goals and they're like, continue with your career goals. But yeah, I mean, that fear is a huge motivator, you know?
In anger and rage.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So bringing about this state of mind on the part of a populace and its leaders that a psychopolitical operative must at all times be believed could eventually be attended by very good fortune. It is not too much to hope that psychopolitical operatives would then in a country such as the United States become the most intimate advisors to political figures, even to the point of advising the entirety of a political party as to its actions in an election. And very important here, on the subject of obedience itself, the most optimum obedience is unthinking obedience. The command given must be obeyed without any rationalizing on the part of the subject. The command must therefore... Sorry, gotta skip forward here. All right, 1 second. The command must therefore be implanted below the thinking process of the subject to be influenced. What's that mean? Below the thinking process. The subconscious brain. Mm-hmm. So they know right here that back in the 30s, they knew that they had to influence the subconscious of a person to really affect genuine change in them. I'll read that again. The command must therefore be implanted below the thinking processes of the subject to be influenced.
I think we're like that now in a way. Like you go to the airport and you watch people just do whatever the TSA tells them. TSA can just be dicks to anybody.
Yeah.
Take your shoes off. Okay. Put your bag over here. Okay.
Yeah.
Give me your shit. Okay. Let me pat you down.
I think I hate looking at other human beings like this, but I consider them like the dead, you know, like Zombieville. You know, like they don't think about anything. They just do what they're told and whether it's right or wrong. And eventually, you know, I mean, anyways, that's what the Beacon podcast is trying to cure.
Well, even like checkpoints, that bothers me. That we have, DOI checkpoints.
Because they're not allowed to do that. That's unreasonable search, right?
Yeah.
That violates your Fourth Amendment, right?
It's like cops used to have to go hide in a bush and wait till somebody swerved and then go pull them over. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's horribly wrong. And you go on YouTube and you find people that are fighting it.
Yeah.
They'll go through these checkpoints and they'll school them on the Constitution.
It's pretty ballsy, dude.
Yeah, well, you got to be sober.
Yeah.
You got to be very sober. And there's also people that stand in front of those things, like a few hundred yards in front, and warn people so that people can turn around in time.
I wonder how often the cops fuck with them, though.
They do. But there's the smart ones.
I've seen one on YouTube where they're like, you got to get out of here. You got to move. I say, no, I don't. I could stand here on the corner. Yeah.
The smart ones know how to fight it.
Well, yeah. I have an app that says DUI Dodger.
But really?
And they post it in the paper anyway, like that there's going to be checkpoints ahead of time. But who reads the newspaper anymore? It's fucking ancient.
True. I don't actually read the physical news like the local rag. Maybe I should, but I just get so much more information out of like books and good like websites that I trust, you know?
I mean, I understand why people do it. Like, you know, I don't want to have, like, say if I'm traveling and TSA is being a dick, which they normally are dicks. You're just going to do what they say because you just want to get on your plane and go.
Yeah, you don't want to.
You don't want to hassle it.
This year, I was so going to talk shit to the TSA, and my wife was like, please don't. She goes, we just want to do our vacation.
Yeah.
I had a guy in line when I was in line, and he was saying it so that people could hear him, but he was like, man, everybody knows capitalism's failed. And this is a TSA agent.
Wow.
He goes, capitalism's failed. He goes, the only thing that could ever work is socialism. I'm not lying about this. This is exactly what he said. You're going to ask my wife. That's when she was like, don't say anything.
What a douche.
Yeah. Because he knows, dude, if anybody does anything, okay, they take you, they search you.
Yeah, there goes all your shit.
They'll find something on you. There's always something that you're doing wrong. There's 64 million laws on the books.
Yeah, you damn shampoo traveling with people.
Yeah, there's something. They can fuck with you. So what do you do, though? You know? Well, you do a podcast. You definitely do a podcast or something like that. You learn the truth and you spread it. Because fighting them one-on-one, like physically, I don't think is the way to do it. I could have argued with the guy, you know, but I don't think that would have gotten... Maybe I should have. I don't know. I think we talked about that on one of the
episodes. We did. When we came back from Vegas and they were fucking with one of our buddies' bags. Part of me wants to think that these people are just doing that job. Like, hey, you know, I was looking for a job. TSA was hiring. I fucking applied. I got it.
Yeah.
But part of me has to think that they have like a fucking disorder or like they're fucking
Well, they don't
sick
hire
fucks.
The smartest people.
No.
They've been, I mean, it's pretty much shown that
intentionally
they,
stupid fucks that'll just do
they
whatever.
They offer psychological evaluations of the people they're hiring and they want a specific IQ band. They don't want too smart.
No.
Because they're just looking for drones. It makes sense.
Well, I saw a quote. I forget who said it, but it was like, you know, the less intelligent you are, the easier you are to control, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've got buddies that they just go, you know what, though? Most of these people are animals, and they just need to be controlled at times. And I go, yeah, but they're only animals because nobody's taught them the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they went to school, like your public school system that's like stupefied them and made them who they are. Like if they could listen to people that could teach them how to love learning again, like if they'd listen to the Beacon podcast or something like that, you know, then they could start learning what the truth is. And then learning would be fascinating to them again. And they'd start questioning everything that they heard, you know, and that's the process of pulling yourself out of this whole thing.
Do you think it's a personality trait to just question things? Because, I mean, when I grew up, I mean, that's why I'm an atheist, because I'd always ask questions to my mom about religion, and it was always like, you don't question this. But then it would be like school, something would be going like, well, what's up with that?
I will argue, you should question everything. You should even take what the Beacon podcast is saying and go research it, just to validate it.
Yeah.
Research what we say and validate it. And if we're wrong, shoot us an email, because our intention is to give you the whole truth.
And we want to learn, too. There's so many topics I want to learn about.
We have no agenda. We have no sponsors. We're just a couple of dudes just trying to get some good info out to the public.
Well, my agenda is to end douchebaggery.
End all douchebaggery. That was our original commitment. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Like, can we just travel in peace without TSA fucking rubbing our nuts?
Yeah, eventually.
Or throwing away your fucking water.
Only once a critical mass of people learn the truth, though. A critical mass amount of people have to learn. And then they simply stop participating in the corrupt society. We find other systems of trade. We don't use the dollar. We start using either gold or silver, or we even do scrip. We do systems of scrip. And we we trade based on that, you know. But we just unplug out of what they've got set up. You just absolutely unplug. But a critical mass of people have to be reached first, you know.
Yeah, it's a hard fight.
Yeah, but it's the right fight.
It's good.
So let me finish this, and then we'll hit a break. The command must therefore be implanted below the thinking processes of the subject to be influenced and must react upon him in such a way as to bring no mental alertness on his part. It is in the interest of psychopolitics that a population be told that a hypnotized person will not do anything against his actual will, will not commit immoral acts, and will not act as so to endanger himself. While this may be true of light parlor hypnotism, it is certainly not true of commands implanted with the use of electric shock, drugs, or heavy punishment. It is counted upon completely that this will be discredited to the general public by psychopolitical operatives, for if it were to be generally known that individuals would obey commands harmful to themselves and would commit immoral acts while under the influence of deep hypnotic commands, the actions of many people working unknowingly in favor of communism would too well be understood. People acting under deep hypnotic commands should be acting apparently of their own volition and out of their own convictions. So, they want you to think that hypnotism is just kind of parlor antics, right? Okay, and then we get on to a new chapter, but I think it's time to take another break. Nick, you got anything else?
Like, I understand people wanting a... They always use the word utopia, like... Oh, if we could only live in a utopia. And that's what I believe these people are trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
But on their terms.
Yeah.
But that's not what you don't want.
And at no threat to their authority of it. Like, if you are in the structure that you're on top, why would you ever want your authority to ever be undermined? The middle class undermines the ruling elite's authority, right?
Yeah, and you're from fucking Russia. It's a shitty fucking place. You're depressed all the time.
Yeah, but this isn't just Russia. The socialism movement. But even the whole socialist revolution was fomented by the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds. So even the people that are in charge of capitalism right now are the same people that are in charge of socialism. They're just using socialism to foment a revolution here so that socialism will be the new norm, because that is one way that they can hypnotize people for full control. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but what I'm trying to get at is, you know, if you're going to tax us, I would think a better life, a better society, you're going to get more money on taxes from people being prosperous.
Yeah, because it's not about money now. Once you have all the money in the world, all that matters is power and nobody being able to fuck with that. Security. Now they have all the world's resources. They have all the money. All they want now is complete security in that. They don't want people with guns or anybody that could rise up and threaten that. That's the big threat.
It's just fucking stupid.
Yeah, it is stupid. I agree.
They're not going to live forever.
Yeah, but
so who's going to control their fucking kids?
You've got to study their religion. They believe in reincarnation along genetic bloodlines. So they believe that they're going to be reincarnated along their bloodlines. That's why they all interbreed.
Wow.
When you study these bloodlines, they all interbreed. Yep. Because you got to study their religion also. The religion of Freemasonry, and for anybody that says Freemasonry is not a religion, stay tuned to the Beacon Podcast. We can prove it in their own words where they say it's a religion. Yes, it is a religion. And it's most closely tied to your Eastern religions, like your ancient Egypt, your Hinduism. Hinduism is really, really close to Freemasonry. Really close. So, yeah, it's bullshit, but that's what they believe. It's psychotic. Yeah. Anyways, okay. We're going to be back in about a piss.
Late.
to exist. I admit I might get a tad bit pissed. All the slaughter in the world and you can't do ish. Now my daughter's in the world, there's a brand new twist. I got high power tools in my shed to summarily separate fools from the head. Some think I drop certified jewels every week. Others know I heavily enforce rules that I speak. Rule number one is unpopular with those that don't possess the binocular to see. It has less to do with me than humanity being free collectively. To all act as individuals and not be dependent upon residuals of elite. With their minions happily licking at their feet, they must be executed in the street. Some will say payday is gone off the deep, but they don't know what's going on, they asleep, shit is deep. And I ain't in the state to explain if your mind is designed to vindicate the insane. They got lots of white phosphorus. Don't think that shit's not for us. That's simply preposterous. They invented every god you trust. All your leaders are installed by the clan. Over and over you fall for the plan. How much more torture can you stand? Trust me, they wanna send you all to Iran. They're getting you ready for an attack. Using the same line for the war with Iraq. There's nothing corrupt, settle your nerves. Dummy as rebels emerge, money with Federal Reserve money. Every act is participating in an event that's manufactured. I'm disgusted by the laws they enacted. It's magnetic to you, I'm simply not attracted. In fact, it's the polar opposite. I'll do everything in my power to stop the shit from happening. There's been a silent evolution, tricking the people into a violent revolution. After they devaluate your funds, poison all your food and confiscate your guns. 80 million plus of us got tons. Walk slow and you will see the way the world runs. You think your Second Amendment is solely intended to hunt? That is exactly what they want. Meanwhile, it's in place for the reason of murdering public servants engaging in treason. I'm not a fan of tyranny. I'm all about true freedom and prosperity. Exist with rights my creator gave to me. Anything less would be mere slavery.
Slaves, you know you better wake up.
Yeah, that was Debt Slaves Revolt by Payday Monsanto. Payday Monsanto is kind of a trip. He's got some interesting songs.
Yeah, that was like a little cool Fuji style.
Yeah, yeah.
Loving.
A little fuged out. All right, this next chapter is The Anatomy of Stimulus Response Mechanisms of Man. Man is a stimulus response animal. His entire reasoning capabilities, even his ethics and morals, depend on stimulus response machinery. This has long been demonstrated by such Russians as Pavlov, and the principles have long been used in handling the recalcitrant, in training children, and in bringing about a state of optimum behavior on the part of a population. Having no independent will of his own, man is easily handled by stimulus response mechanisms. It is only necessary to install a stimulus into the mental anatomy of man to have that stimulus reactivate and respond anytime an exterior command source calls it into being. The mechanisms of stimulus response are easily understood. The body takes pictures of every action in the environment around an individual. When the environment includes brutality, terror, shock, and other such activities, the mental image picture gained contains in itself all the ingredients of the environment. If the individual himself was injured during the moment, the injury itself will remanifest when called upon to respond by an exterior command source. As an example of this is if an individual is beaten and is told during the entirety of the beating that he must obey certain officials, he will in the future feel the beginnings of the pain the moment he begins to disobey. The installed pain itself reacts as a policeman, for the experience of the individual demonstrates to him that he cannot combat and will receive pain from certain officials. The mind can become very complex in its stimulus responses. As easily demonstrated in hypnotism, an entire chain of commands having to do with a great many complex actions can be beaten, shocked, or terrorized into a mind. Terrorized into a mind. Terrorized into a mind. And will there lie dormant until called into view by some similarity in the circumstances of the environment to the incident of punishment. The stimulus we call the quote-unquote incident of punishment, where the response mechanism need only contain some small part of the stimulus to call into view the mental image picture and cause it to exert against the body, the pain sequence. So long as the individual obeys the picture or follows the commands of the stimulus implantation, he is free of pain. The behavior of children is regulated in this fashion in every civilized country. The father, finding himself unable to bring about immediate obedience and training on the part of his child, resorts to physical violence. And after administering punishment of a physical nature to the child on several occasions, is gratified to experience complete obedience on the part of the child each time the father speaks. In that parents are wont to be lenient with their children. I don't know what that says.
Parents in that...
Oh, yeah. Sorry. In that parents are wont to be lenient with their children, they seldom administer sufficient punishment to bring about entirely optimum obedience. The ability of the organism to withstand punishment is very great. Complete and implicit response can be gained only by stimuli sufficiently brutal to actually injure the organism. The Cossack method of breaking wild horses is a useful example. The horse will not restrain itself or take any of its rider's commands. The rider, wishing to break it, mounts and takes a flask of strong vodka and smashes it between the horse's ears. The horse, struck to its knees, its eyes filled with alcohol, mistaking the dampness for blood, instantly and thereafter gives its attention to the rider and never needs further breaking. Difficulty in breaking horses is only occasioned when light punishments are administered. There is some mawkish sentimentality about breaking the spirit, but what is desired here is an obedient horse, and sufficient brutality brings about the obedient horse. The stimulus response mechanisms of the body are such that pain and the command subdivide as to counter each other. The mental image picture of the punishment will not become effective upon the individual unless the command content is disobeyed. It is pointed out in many early Russian writings that this is a survival mechanism. It has already been well and thoroughly used in the survival of communism. It is only necessary to deliver into the organism a sufficient stimulus to gain an adequate response. These principles, built from the earliest days of Pavlov, by constant and continuous Russian development, have at last become of enormous use to us in our conquest. For less modern and well-informed countries of Earth lacking this mechanism, failing to understand it, and coaxed into somnolence by our own psycho-political operatives who discount and disclaim it, cannot avoid succumbing to it. The body is less able to resist a stimulus if it has insufficient food and is weary. Therefore, it is necessary to administer all such stimuli to individuals when their ability to resist has been reduced by privation and exhaustion.
So basically torturing.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
It's the same.
Now, this is actually, specifically going into how they do it and why they do it each step of the way.
To exhaust you, to torture you.
Yep. So you hear about, like, re-education camps and, what's the other word I'm thinking of? Yeah, like re-education camps. But similar methodologies are used, right? Because this is the psychological like background to it.
Well, if that's like connected to, you know, our diet now, even in America now, is horrible. You can't. They want to make it legal to not label genetically modified food mm-hmm. now, so they could feed you anything. It could be toxic or not.
Yeah.
Probably too dumb, you know.
Oh, for sure. And you see that Agenda 21 through the UN? It's a huge program, but one of its branches is to control vitamins and minerals to such a degree that you would need a doctor's prescription to get vitamins and minerals.
Wow.
That's through the UN. It's called Agenda 21, and I forgot the exact I forget. There's so much shit to remember. It's crazy. But yeah. So then it has to be, you know, a state-approved doctor
to take vitamin
that's playing
C.
ball that, and, you know, and what that also does is that only certain people that can afford to go to the doctor and get the prescription for it actually are getting it. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Do you take vitamins?
I do. Yeah. I take really good vitamins and minerals.
Yeah, I do minerals too, not every day. You do like silver and stuff, huh?
I only do silver if I'm like getting something. If I feel like I'm getting sick.
You feel like you're under the weather or something?
But I never get sick. But I have it. I have the colloidal. It's colloidal silver.
Wow.
I can also make it.
How do you make it?
I have a generator. A colloidal silver generator.
Really?
So
do you stick some dirt in there? And
no, it's like a box that has two prongs. Like, remember the old school speakers had a black and red prongs? In those prongs, you put silver wire, right? And then that goes into a cup or a jar, mason jar, of water. Not distilled water. It's got to have some electrolytes in it. It's got to have, like, some like tap water would work good.
Okay.
Right? Or sparklets would probably work fine. That has like some minerals, right? Sodium bicarbonate and stuff for like for flavor. But it has to have some kind of electrolytes or the electrical signal won't conduct in there. So anyways, you turn the thing on and through electrolysis it sends a signal out one and into the other, right? Through the water, and it sloughs off through hydrolysis electrolysis the silver off of one of those wires.
Plugs? Yeah.
One atom at a time, so it's colloidal ionic, and it's they're ions, they become ions, so it's ionic silver. And you do it
and it
for,
makes like one pill or
no so colloidal silver is a solution.
Oh, okay.
And so you you do it for a certain duration of time based on the concentration that you want. So certain concentrations are
What's
for...
What's it taste like?
Just like kind of like sour water. Like, it's not bad at all. I mean, almost just like purified water. It almost tastes like that. But certain concentrations are for like certain applications. Like, you have an eye infection, then you want a stronger one for like topical things. For just taking it internally, drinking it, you want like a weaker one. They have nebulizers. I have a nebulizer where you can actually nebulize it into a gas and inhale it, like if you have a lung infection or something like that.
Weird.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Who came up with this?
You know, actually, how they came up with the is that the they noticed. I don't know the year, but that the aristocracy didn't get sick. Hardly at all compared to your general population. And they attribute it to their use of always eating off of silver spoons.
Oh.
And so they thought just through that they were doing it. So that's where the research actually started, and they found out that silver is a major antiviral, antibacterial, antifungal thing. And that's why, like, even your good water filters now are silver impregnated because silver stops, like, all like bad bacteria and viruses and shit from being able to grow.
Pigeon.
Yeah. So that's how the colloidal silver shit. Now I heard talk about that colloidal silver they wanted to transport it for use against the Ebola virus in Africa. And they actually had the governments in a lot of these African nations stop these shipments of colloidal silver to some of the affected areas. You hear about anything like that?
No.
Yeah.
You're the only one I know that does the colloidal silver, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
I don't do it. I hardly ever get sick either.
Yeah, I just don't get sick.
Like, there's times I wish I would just so I could just take a day off work, but.
Yeah. Just take one off anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're talking about exhaustion. Refusal to let them sleep over many days, denying them adequate food, then brings about an optimum state for the receipt of a stimulus. If the person is then given an electrical shock, is told while the shock is in action that he must obey and do certain things, he has no choice but to do them, or to re-experience, because of his mental image picture of it, the electric shock. This is highly scientific and intensely workable mechanism that cannot be overestimated in the practice of psychopolitics. Drugging the individual produces an artificial exhaustion, and if he is drugged or shocked and beaten and given a string of commands, his loyalties themselves can be definitely rearranged. This is PDH, or pain drug hypnosis. The psychopolitical operative in training should be thoroughly studied in the subject of hypnotism and post-hypnotic suggestion. He should pay particular attention to the forgetter mechanism aspect of hypnotism, which is to say, implantation in the unconscious mind. And I think that as far as we've learned it, that what they're talking about is the subconscious. Mm. I've heard the subconscious be called the unconscious mind at times. Different people call it different things. Jung called it, he had the three different levels. He had your conscious mind, and then below that, the subconscious, and then below that, he had the collective unconscious, where everybody actually shares information at some deep-ass level. But I don't know. That's, you can never prove that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's times like when you're like somewhere with your friends and you like see something like, and you'll have like the same thought or feeling, but that doesn't mean that's just an emotional response or.
I will simply say, I just don't know. I have no clue. I mean, I don't know. But this is when you start getting into like mystery school stuff. Like their studies of the brain have been intense for a long time. He should note particularly that a person given a command in a hypnotic state should, and then told when still in that condition to forget it, will execute it on a stimulus response signal in the environment after he has, quote unquote, awakened from his hypnotic trance. And a lot of this kind of refers back to our NLP show. If people are wondering, like, kind of what it. the subconscious mind is and that kind of stuff and how that works, we did a pretty good job at diving into that stuff on our it's called You Down with NLP, and I think that might have been like our 9th episode or something like that. That was a good one though. That was a fun one.
Back in the day,
old school.
Dude, it's amazing how time flies, man. As I've gotten older, like I was, you know, because it was just New Year's right now. Like, that was the fastest year of my life.
It went like a blink of an eye.
Damn.
Let's talk about... let me finish this paragraph, and then I think we found a good spot to close it off.
Cool, man.
I only got... Just one more paragraph. Exercises in bringing about insanity seizures at will, simply by demonstrating a signal to persons upon whom pain drug hypnosis has been used, and exercises in making the seizures come about through talking to certain persons about certain places and times should also be used. Brain surgery, as developed in Russia, should also be practiced by the psychopolitical operative in training to give him full confidence in 1, the crudeness in which it can be done, and 2, the certainty of erasure of the stimulus response mechanism itself, and 3, the production of imbecility, idiocy, and discoordination on the part of the patient, and 4, the small amount of comment which casualties in brain surgery occasion. So if all else fails in all of these techniques, They go, well, at least the person's in the care of a psychopolitical operator, and if nothing else works, we can always just refer him to brain surgery, which basically at that point...
Lobotomies or...
It's got to be lobotomy. I haven't read it in here, what they're talking about, but they say basically they can render somebody through a quick, easy surgery, they can render somebody an imbecile. Yeah. And it's got to be because that's what they do at these mental health places, right? If somebody isn't getting along, they just lobotomy them, don't they?
Or they used to do the shock therapy through your temples, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think a lobotomy, they basically just spike your frontal lobe, dude, through your eyes.
They just jab it to death, right?
Who the fuck thought of that?
These fucks. They're crazy.
Ugh.
So that's where we're going to end it off right there. But food for friggin' thought. That's crazy. And that's crazy.
Well, I mean, that's one thing that bothers me is that I believe we kind of touched on it last show, but it's there's so many disorders now. You can be forgiven of shitty behavior.
I read that. I said that if we can take everything and instead of criminal acts, we can make everything disorders, then we'll get everybody placed into the hands of psychopolitical operators.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's ADD. He can't have a weapon.
And you know what? He needs to take this medicine. We need court ordered this and that. And he
mandate.
Needs to see this professional and this. It's all about mental health now, right?
And I do believe there are disorders. My grandma's bipolar. I've fucking seen it, man. It's like a switch, you know? But, I mean, I think they pass these... they pass it out too much. They're too quick to call somebody, not retarded, but, say they have this disorder or whatever it is, a crazy ailment.
Yeah, I agree. And some of it, I don't know how much of it is, genuine disorders or how much of it is, could...
It's a personality.
ADHD could be like a blessing, right? Even though you're not necessarily that nice to other people or whatever, your brain might be firing a million times a minute, and that could be a good thing, right? You could, if you focus it right.
I think so. I think they're quick to judge kids on ADD or whatever. Well, he's not doing good in school. Well, because fucking school's boring. The class sucks. He's full of fucking. There's all these. I think most kids, they're just high functioning. They're just this is more interesting. They're trying to find something else more interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I did too. School, the way school is outlined, it sucks. They don't make shit fun to learn. Well, by the way, they are trying to, say history. I used to hate history because...
It was always monotone.
And when they taught you a subject, you had no idea how it related to all of history. And they don't teach you... revisionist history puts all of history in one nice, neat package and says, basically, the power structure has always tried to subdue everybody else. And everything in that history fits into a perfect package.
Mm-hmm.
Where in school... They don't give you the background of, why people act the way they act or why history came out a certain way. And so you're just learning, you'd be like, okay, Whiskey Rebellion, I don't know what that is. It sounds boring. It has nothing to do with anything. But it does if you know the grand scheme of history, the big layout, And they don't teach that to you. So it's boring and you're uninterested and these kids, they don't want to learn anything. And when you force them to be in there and learn this shit, then they start to hate learning.
Yeah. Man. And then the other thing that bothers me about our society today is we just pander to people who get offended. We're just weakening everybody.
Yeah.
He said a bad word. I was offended.
Yeah.
Or, Timmy doesn't eat peanut butter, so I don't think anybody else should eat peanut butter at the school.
The First Amendment was not made so that people could say nice things to each other. That was made so that people could piss each other off. And you know what? If you're pissed off, just go somewhere else. If you don't like it, or maybe stick around a while and you might learn something.
Yeah.
But I like that speech from JFK where he said Solon, the ancient Athenian lawmaker, Solon, decreed it a crime to shrink away from controversies. So if there was controversy, it was a crime back then to shrink away from it. You had to stand your ground.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Stand up for what you believe in, yeah.
Because then, if you're wrong, you're going to know it really quick.
Like, ugh, they're demonizing so much stupid shit. Like,
political correctness don't is say part bossy. Of Marx's theory. Right?
Yeah, don't say bossy. It's like, how do you describe a term? Even the don't word retard. Bossy. I know people get fucking mad about retard, but retard
is a true thing.
You could describe it. Just describe something. Like,
yeah. there's a retarder on transmission systems to affect their braking.
To
right?
slow. I was going to use the same example, or what's called a Jake brake on Class A vehicles.
Yeah,
it just like pinches off the exhaust, and then that's when you hear the trucks go when they slow down.
Retarder.
It's slowing something down. Mm-hmm. If that's in your brain, you have a retard. You know.
How dare you?
I know it sounds bad, but I mean,
dude, it doesn't.
One of my
we
first...
won't be censored on this podcast.
No.
Nope.
And what, we're exercising our first what good does it do to just change the vocabulary? If it means the same thing, why are you offended if I call you...
Here's the thing, too. If that's the truth and society now deems that as an unacceptable thing, then society is straight up censoring the truth.
Yeah.
You know, like, at this point now...
Pretty soon you're going to be able to call somebody fat.
Well, I guarantee you, pretty soon, you're not going to be able to say...
Oh, you're obese. Don't call me fat.
You won't be... The main thing you won't be able to say is the shit that we're saying on this podcast.
Oh, I know.
That's the shit you will not be able to say. That's... like, have you ever read that Fahrenheit 457 in school? Do they ever make you read that? Where they burn the books? The government comes and burns the books? Or there's a lot of... or your George Orwell's 1984 and... Or a Minority Report kind of has like the, is it thought police? Like even before you commit a crime,
they come get
they
you.
Can come and get you because just of the what you, you know. And that one actually has other crazy implications because these crazy ass oracles are in this pool and they're like dreaming up what's going to happen in the future. That's a pretty crazy ass movie.
But yeah, I've never seen that one. Is that Tom Cruise?
Yeah, that's Tom Cruise. God, he's such a heartthrob, isn't he?
I think he's a pretty good actor, though. I mean, he does all his own stunts.
Yeah. I mean, he's... the weirdest thing about him is that he's, you know, in the Church of Scientology, which I was looking... I had to look into that a little bit because this book actually talks a little bit about Dianetics. Dianetics is the study of that Church of Scientology. And the interesting thing about Dianetics is it goes into how your brain is formed... And it's formed through the traumatic experiences that have happened in your life that cause it to be limiting. So it says if you got hit with a baseball in the head, then all of those things surrounding that event, you log in your brain. And if any of those things start happening again, mm-hmm. you think you're going to get hit in the head again and you'll react. Which is exactly what they're saying on this, that's how they train people.
It's well, like I heard that L. Ron Hubbard actually has talked about psychopolitics. Like he's aware of like...
So, dude, it all fucking interrelates. He was, I believe, a 33rd degree Mason, and he trained under, God, I just read this one, but it was Jack Parsons. Jack Parsons, he was like this huge like Satanist, but he learned from Aleister Crowley, who was like this big, huge, like famous Satanist, right? Mm. This dude climbed all the ranks of Freemasonry, and then when that wasn't enough, he started his own orders. Like, he started the Order of the Golden... Or did he start the Gold? He joined the Golden Dawn. I think he started the Ordo Templi Orientis, but he started all these different orders. But Jack Parsons, who was a smart motherfucker, even though evil, super smart, he's basically did all of our JPL... All of that was he was like a huge founding member of this of the rocket program
wow.
of our rocket program, but he wrote to Aleister Crowley and he said, "I've got this guy, L. Ron Hubbard, and this guy is right up our alley. He's straight on board with all of our beliefs and all this stuff."
Does it? Are you shocked that there is Scientology? Still, when L. Ron Hubbard straight out came out and said, yeah, I made up a fake religion to make money.
Did he come out and say that?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah, it was like he did it as a bet. Like, I bet you I can make a religion and make money.
It doesn't
and, like,
really
they make a
shitload
of money. They're right there in Hollywood, fucking prime real estate.
Your high-level Masons and above, they communicate with each other in something called cant or Twilight language or symbolism, but it basically, a lot of it is sarcasm. They communicate in sarcasm. Like, if you were to take Albert Pike, he was one of your major leaders in Freemasonry. If you took his morals and dogma and tried to read it just normally, you wouldn't understand it. It's given from a sarcastic point of view. They at that level that they get at, they get so cocky that they go, oh, dude, we'll just write this, and the people won't even fucking – they think they're that much smarter than us.
Yeah.
That's how they talk. And so that doesn't surprise me at all when you say that he actually did that. That's right up there at that level. That's yeah. right up their alley. They're dickheads. They're douchebag dickheads.
Well, right on, man.
All right, what else, man? What do we want to do this week? How are we closing this thing out?
You got some jams or?
Yeah, I think I got a good old jam. We'll do.
Should we bust out with some reggae or?
Ah, that sounds like a good idea.
Just leave you feeling good.
Leave you feeling good.
Thank you for listening. Hit us up on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, let's give it to them.
Like we said, we always like some constructive criticism. So if there's a topic you'd like to hear, shoot it our way.
Please.
And or just like us, hit it out there, and thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys. Hit us up on Facebook at The Beacon Podcast or Twitter at Beacon Podcast. Email us at thebeaconpodcast@gmail.com. Or find us on iTunes, search The Beacon Podcast, and look for the earth that is surrounded by the square and the circle. We love you guys so much, and we'll talk to you guys soon. All right, peace out.
Merchant ships, minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs. From mental slavery, none but ourselves can free our mind. Oh, have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had, redemption songs, all I ever had, redemption songs, these songs of freedom, songs of freedom.